Good evening, Orna.
Good evening, Karen.
First of all, not everyone will know how Myrina works. Can you give us a brief overview?
Sure. It's a small T-shaped plastic device which is inserted via a thin tube via the cervix to sit inside the uterus, and it releases a very small amount of progesterone hormone, same amount every day over 5 years, and that has a couple of different actions. It makes the womb lining very, very thin so that any bleeding is lessened, and because of that, a fertilized egg is unable to implant in the lining, so it prevents pregnancy, and in a certain number of cycles it also stops an egg being released altogether. So it's got a few different actions there for contraception and for heavy menstrual bleeding.
And Jadis is pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's a smaller version of the Myrina, lasts 3 years with a smaller amount of hormone. It's just licensed for contraception, but it does have an effect on bleeding. It makes bleeding lighter, but doesn't tend to stop it altogether.
I see. So they're basically like a slow-release internal pill, if you like. How often do you get it changed?
So the Myrina is changed every 5 years generally, and JDEF every 3 years. And this makes them very effective forms of long-acting reversible contraception, as we call it. Because if you don't have to keep remembering to take something every day like a pill, the failure rate is far, far lower. And the satisfaction with these methods tends to be much higher as well than with the contraceptive pill.
In relation to how it releases the hormone, is it like a pump action? How does it know how much to release every day for 5 years?
That was probably a bit above my pay grade, but it's through a reservoir. It's through just a very clever reservoir. The same way as the implant, the contraceptive implant works, which is also a five-year device, two implants in the arm, releasing a form of progesterone through a little reservoir, exactly the same amount every day.
They're incredible, yeah. Aren't they?
Yeah, very clever.
So the stats regarding Myrina and teenage pregnancies, as a doctor, you must see a lot of teenagers coming to you for contraceptive advice.
Yes, we do. And, I mean, New Zealand is interesting in that it's got one of the highest teenage pregnancy rates still, actually, in the OECD. We actually overtook the USA a few years ago. And so the only countries in the OECD which have a higher teenage pregnancy rate than us are Turkey, Bulgaria, Romania, Chile, and Mexico. So, and the reason that's important is because teenage pregnancy is associated strongly with child poverty and, you know, less chance of educational attainment and things like this. And it's something that successive governments have been sort of looking at and working on ways to prevent. And I suppose for us as doctors, the addition of another funded form of contraception may be able to make some difference to that, you know, if we have the training to go along with it, because that's another issue.
The training in what regard, Orna?
So, Karen, in New Zealand currently, there is no mechanism by which practitioners can be trained in the insertion and removal of long-acting forms of reversible contraception. So even when a device is funded, there are still some barriers to be overcome, and finding a trained practitioner is one of those barriers. In other countries like Australia and the UK, you have to go through a fairly rigorous training program, including learning theory and then being supervised, doing insertions on models and then on people before you can be assessed as competent. And unfortunately, there is no such training available in New Zealand at the moment. And so practitioners generally learn if they haven't learned abroad, they tend to learn from each other or maybe by watching a video. So there is quite a lot of variability out there. So again, it may be that people will still have some difficulty accessing these devices in the near future unless training is brought in. And again, the ministry are looking at this, but I think it's still some way away.
Right. So even though they may be learning online, for example, on how to insert an IUD, a GP still can insert one.
it's very common for GPs to insert them. And when we are lucky, there are also very experienced practitioners working in Family Planning New Zealand. They train their practitioners to a very, very high standard. It's just that in primary care, which is where I work, currently there is very little access to training. Family Planning have offered some training over the last few years, but the waiting list in some areas can be 4 or 5 years, and they only train a very small number of people per year. So that's really where the bottleneck has been.
Gosh, that's interesting, because the old copper IUDs, are they still being used, by the way?
They are, Karen. They're very, very popular because a lot of women don't necessarily want hormonal contraception. Some women worry about maybe hormonal side effects, and so they are quite happy to have a copper IUD.
Well, thanks for clearing that up, but we're here to talk about the petition, so
yeah,
well done. You must be very pleased that that's gone through.
I am. I had an enormous amount of help and support with that. I would definitely not have contemplated starting something like that if it hadn't been for the encouragement of people like the Child Poverty Action Group and some other really very supportive mentors of mine, such as Leslie McCann at the University of Auckland. It just became very frustrating. I had been doing a survey into what the barriers to contraception were for patients and practitioners, and every single GP that I interviewed for this particular study mentioned the lack of access to Myrina as their biggest issue and the impact that it had on women. And so I had, you know, gone around things the right way over the last few years, writing documents and letters to the Ministry of Health and to Pharmac, and I suppose it was just born out of frustration that in the end I thought, if nothing else, a petition might just draw attention to the, you know, the injustice that such a basic piece of medical kit was not funded.
Quite expensive too, aren't they?
Up until now, they've really been out of reach of most women. Unfunded, they can be around $500, $450, something like that, and then you may have to pay an additional fee on top for insertion in a primary care setting, because as a general rule, GPs aren't funded for contraception apart for in certain areas for certain women. There's an enormous amount of variability if you get funding. And it's a shame, because contraception is one of those things which is really basic healthcare, basic public health, and should be available to everybody without any restriction, because it, you know, it saves money. We know that it saves an enormous amount of money. So in the UK, for every pound that you spend, it saves £12. They've crunched all the numbers, and that's because you have, as a result of effective contraception, less terminations of pregnancy, less premature babies, less small for gestational age babies, which are more likely if pregnancies are not spaced adequately. So really, universal contraception being made available is a great public health measure, which should be considered.
As a family planning doctor, as you have been in the UK since 1999, I believe, and then coming to New Zealand, why do you think that we have these health inequities here? Because I imagine Myrina was funded by the NHS.
It's a very interesting landscape, actually, and I have looked at this quite carefully. There was an interesting review done by KPMG for the Ministry of Health back in 2013 into New Zealand's sexual and reproductive health services, and their conclusion was that within the service there were extremely skilled, passionate people who were doing the very best they could, but the service itself was very fragmented and the approach was not joined up. And that was back in 2013. And they made several recommendations, which, to my knowledge, haven't been acted on yet. And that would include things like making, you know, the service more universal so that it covered the whole country and everyone got the same access. So, for instance, Family Planning, who provide an excellent service, are not available in every area in New Zealand. For instance, there's no family planning service in Hawke's Bay, and there's nothing in Northland, north of Whangarei. So, and in rural areas in the South Island, you can be almost 300 kilometres from your nearest family planning service. So this I think is probably the biggest issue. Poor access for patients, as well as, you know, making it difficult to find a practitioner, a competent practitioner.
Well, that may be your next petition.
I might have a little break from petition. But, yes, I could look at that.
Well, thank you very much for your time tonight, Orna.
Thanks very much, Karen, for having me.